Welcome to Think Oral,
where we connect the unconnected between oral and physical health.
I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Levine.
And I'm your host, Maria Filipova.
Let's get at it.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Think Oral Health podcast. We are recording today from beautiful winter in New York, and I'm very excited about the conversation topic because, as you all know, Jonathan and I are very committed to bringing and highlighting leaders in this podcast that are doing things differently and that are succeeding in bridging silos between different care teams. And so today we have a really interesting discussion and a great surprise because not only do we have one exceptional leader, but we have two exceptional leaders doing amazing work that we want to talk to you about. The topic is doing well by doing good. The topic is serving the underserved. And we are here to tell you all about the amazing work that and how that's happening. With that, I would pass it on to my partner in crime and co-host of the podcast, Dr. Jonathan Levine, who would introduce our two, not one, but two conversation partners for today.
Thank you, Maria. And yes, super excited to have Jane Wang and Brian Carey from Benevis. I must tell you, we're really looking forward. We've been looking forward to this conversation. We're going to dig in on how you can have a business model that can help the underserved and have a sustainable cash flow to support that effort. And we're going to dig in on that because that is truly special. Let me start with Jane, just a little bit quick bio. Jane is a dentist. She went to Columbia. She is passionate about dentistry. She worked in a multi-specialty practice in Danbury, Connecticut, and she relocated to Maryland to join Benevis. I caught up with Jane a couple of months ago, and I'm so excited for her to tell us her personal story and what excites her about Benevis. Brian's the chief executive officer of Benevis, and that is a leading DSO for practices focused on life-changing dental care and orthodontics. But what's really special about that is their focus on creating equality where there's the underserved population. They have a 20-year history of providing a high-quality care to approximately 5 million children and adults in 120 underserved communities. And I will tell you personally, having a foundation and looking to help the underserved, I'm so excited for us to dig in on this. So welcome, Jane. Welcome, Brian, to the Think Oral Health podcast with Maria Filipova and myself.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here. Happy to represent Benevis and excited about this topic because I spend every day thinking of how can we be successful as a business, but make sure that we're fulfilling a mission.
Exactly. And Jane.
Thank you, Dr. Levine and Maria, for having me on. I so enjoyed speaking with you a couple of months ago. So it's great that we can reconnect. And I know that we had a lot of interweaving interests, which is to really provide access to care for the underserved community. And it's something that we personally feel passionate about. So it's great that I could do it professionally.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm so excited to have both Brian and Jane and having you on the podcast. Let me start it off, Maria, if I can, with a big burning, yearning question that I have to Brian, the CEO, who is overseeing the profitability and the accountability of the organization from the top. Brian, how do you do it? How do you focus on the underserved community, but also have a profitable enterprise so that you can maintain the sustainability of the organization going forward?
Dr. Levine, I really appreciate that question because first and foremost, we have to provide the same care. We just can't do something different. But I want to talk about what we do differently, because in order to be successful as what I call a purpose-built business, we're only getting paid 70 cents on the dollar by Medicaid relative to other payers. And how do you do that? We really do it with three things. One is that we have access and availability. Our offices are within the communities of the underserved population. And so they are able to get to us. And we're also open evenings and Saturdays at times that work for them. So first is that you just have to be able to be where the patients are. The second is we have a care delivery model that is different. So we have assisted hygiene, where the hygienist has a lot of assistance from the dental assistants to make sure that they are able to see as many children as possible, but again, provide the same care. And then finally, we have systems. We have a proprietary system that helps us in terms of schedule management, confirmation rates. Our population has a hard time getting to a dental appointment and being able to show up on time because they just don't have all the ability that others in other communities do. And it's really through those three things that essentially we're able to have our offices highly productive, but again, providing the same care that they would in any other community in the United States.
Amazing. We're going to dig in on that a little bit. That is amazing. I love the idea of an assistant hygiene to create efficiencies from a timing perspective and a high level of delivery of care. How did you come up with that assisted hygiene model? Was that something that you folks have figured out through iteration and your own personal growth in the organization, or was that something that was learned elsewhere?
I'll ask Dr. Wang to maybe touch on it as well. But as background, we started 20 years ago as a purpose-built business and said, we want to have an office design and a care team that can allow for this level of care to happen in a manner that also allows us to be effective and efficient. So the model has largely been in place since the business was started 20 years ago. And Dr. Wang, maybe you could talk a little bit about how we're able to really assist the hygienists as well as the dental assistants in migrating to our care delivery model.
Sure. I think it's important to remember that hygienists are dental providers, and when they are supported, they can be most efficient. And I think that with our model of seeing high volume of patients, when they have that support, they can work more efficiently to provide the care that they were trained to provide, which is hygiene, prophy, oral hygiene instructions, and to have the dental assistant support them through taking the radiographs and walking the patients in and out so that they have that, because you don't need a clinician to do that. And to have the assistants to provide that support, I think helps us to be efficient and really provide that high quality care for our patients where we are able to see high volume in our patient offices.
And maybe Dr. Levine and Maria, for your listeners, they probably have not been to one of our offices. So let me explain what our office looks like, because it's probably different than most of your listeners' dental office. Mm-hmm. So we're probably in a strip mall. Mm-hmm. We have a big waiting room that looks almost like a motor vehicle department. Mm-hmm. And then we have what we call a hygiene bay, which will have 8 to 10 chairs. In some ways, it sounds like it's a mass operation, but it's actually fun. When you're in there and there's 6, 8 kids there with their sunglasses on, getting ready to have a cleaning, it's a fun environment, but it's an environment that is conducive to this assisted hygiene model. And so that might help as people are trying to say, what is it that they're doing?
I love that you went there because that gives us a visual, and it also gives us a connection that care delivery doesn't always happen in a clinic, in a dental office, or in a physician's office. It happens in the community because we need to meet patients where they are in their lunch break as they're going from work and coming back from work. And that's really critical. So thanks for reminding us of this. I do want to dig into a little bit of that model, the very special model that you've created. But before that, I want to call out for our listeners the importance of the service that you provide. Because it is true that if we, especially for low-income populations or underserved populations who don't have access to routine dental care, the alternative is going to the emergency room. And we're still seeing over $1.8 million visits annually in the emergency room due to non-traumatic dental care. That's $3 billion of cost to the system. And so as we think about the importance of getting care in the community to patients who really need it but don't have the access or the availability, it's really important. So this is not necessarily a oral health or dental care issue. This is overall health system issue that cuts right at the crux of the cost of the care that we're delivering today. Because for those listeners, and we have two physicians, oral health physicians on the phone, going to the ED is the most expensive, least efficient way to deliver care for oral health issues. An ED doctor would be able to do what? Dr. Jonathan Levine and Dr. Wang, what would a ED doctor be able to do for a patient with oral pain? Opioids or maybe antibiotics. And then they'll refer them to a dentist and it will end up in the strip mall center that you guys are running.
If they're lucky,
that's right. And so it's important to think about the broader context in which you're running those clinics and how important that is.
It's really important, and income has a very significant impact on access and care. And children of lower income families are twice as likely to have tooth decay. So they're also then going to be twice as likely to have the school absence or end up in the emergency room. And that's what we are seeking to do, is to close that gap, to be able to be available, accessible, so that income is not a determination of whether or not you receive care.
What is the role? You've created something really special here and you've scaled it and you've been doing it for years. So maybe talk to us a little bit about the role of technology and innovation in that model, that special model that you've created. And people, when they talk about technology, they're like, oh, well, there's AI or innovation is associated with technology, but there's other ways in which you're innovating that are probably equally important and critical to that success of the model. So talk to us about that a little bit.
I'll talk a little bit about the sort of business administration aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for Dr. Wang to talk about the use of technology in the care delivery. But we actually do have a proprietary practice management system. And it sounds very basic, but it takes less time to do a cleaning and an oral health exam for a child than it does for a 50-year-old. And so we have things, everything from our schedule blocks to our confirmation process to the use of technology around predictive confirmations, which again is really important for this cohort and this demographic where it is a challenge to balance your life and get your child to the dentist. And most of the innovation that we have on the business side is around schedule management, to do everything we can to have appointments be of the right time and the right availability, and then to really support our patients by confirming, make sure they get reminders 7 days out, 3 days out, the next day out. And we are using AI around when the best time to do those confirmations, as well as virtual assistance in terms of if someone does need to make a change and try to reschedule. But I'd love for Dr. Wang to talk about also how we use our medical records, since we are using one practice management system throughout Benevis.
Yeah, I was going to say that as a clinician, I feel blessed to have a dental service organization that supports us on the operational side so that as a clinician, we can focus on patient care because that's what we went to school for and that's what we enjoy doing. And part of it is they are so good about supporting us through making sure that we're updated in terms of our dental records. It's all digital. Our radiograph system, everything is digital so that we can access it in different ways following HIPAA rules. And I think that's really important so that we are able to provide the full quality care for our patients and create the dental home for our patients so that we can communicate with physicians, pediatricians, and to keep that communication open so that we are not, as you said, Maria, we're not just focusing on oral health, but we're really focusing on the overall health of our patients. And I love that we started out seeing children, and that's why we have that open bay model where we know that children can learn from one another to say, hey, it's not as scary as I thought it would be because that child who's 3 years old is doing it and is enjoying seeing the dentist. And now we are able to provide care for the full family. We first started out with children, added parents. Now we are able to provide full family service for our patients in the communities, which is great.
And how do you, Jane, how do you balance the physical layout of an open bay for the children? Because children and ortho, that's an open bay model and it's great. But how do the adults respond to that? What have you found? Because it's against the norm and it's very innovative in its own right. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because we have different schools of adults, right? Some adults, they want to be treated like children because they have a lot of anxieties and they are nervous about seeing us. So they love that they get to be seen with children. But then there are also adults who want that privacy. So we have created different models within a hygiene bay where we call it transitional, where it can be converted to be a little bit more private with barriers on the side of the chairs, which made us very equipped to see patients during COVID as well. But even we also have different separate operatory rooms that were created for hygiene patients so that we can cater it to what the patient needs. The adult patient needs to feel comfortable and to continue to come back to follow up with their care. So adults, they're all different.
Of course. Brian, I got to lob this back to you. I'm trying to do the math here. You're getting paid 30% lower, 70 cents on a dollar. You deliver care at an amazing level. You take care of the underserved and you have a sustainable model. And we're answering that question and we're looking at a certain level of efficiency, an improved and more efficient layout, proprietary, probably SOPs. But wrap your arms around this a little bit, because if you're running at 24% margins in a DSO, 28% in the dental practice, you're doing pretty good. So back to my question, how do you do it?
I would say it's really two things. One, our doctors work very hard. They really do. Dr. Wang is a great kind of leader by example. And they are, from the moment they get into the office and are at the huddle till when that last patient is walking out the door, they are working hard and we appreciate it and everything relies on that. I happen to think a lot of them do it because they relate to the mission. A lot of our providers have been from these communities, live in these communities. And in addition to just practicing their profession, they really do connect with the community. The second thing is, it's an extender model. So the assisted hygiene model, we are using the sort of dental assistants to do as much as possible around x-ray, medical record entry, positioning patients or other things. And I'd say it's really those two things that are key to our being able to deliver the same quality care, but in an environment that where the reimbursement is different and that requires us to be very focused on delivering that care in an effective manner.
Tremendous, really tremendous.
But I just want to go back a little bit to innovation. And I know
my favorite topic. Innovation. Well, we don't talk about innovation at all. That's not at all something we talk about.
It's really just, even all of us who are on this call together and we talk about how we want to integrate healthcare and oral care because it is total care. But even our own organizations have a hard time with change. And I'll give you two examples. We had a payer come to us and say, as of March 1 of 2023, we're going to require diagnosis codes on all of the claims. And everybody was up in arms of, oh my gosh, this is extra work and we're going to end up with claims being denied and we're going to have to figure out how to put this in our system, how to get it across. And I said, well, wait a second. Haven't we all been saying how important it is for oral health care to be integrated with total care? And if somebody's looking for a diagnosis code so they can then try to correlate some other complexities or chronic disease or risk, we should be all over it. So I said, even if we're going to have to hire additional people in the interim to do this, we want to be leading this because it is so core to our mission. But it's hard, right? Because you're talking about change and you're talking about you have to do something a little differently. And then we had a similar thing where one of our payers asked us to just add additional medical notes in a certain nomenclature so that their systems could pick it up and then correlate it with the medical records. And we just don't have time. That's going to be an additional 3 minutes of medical record. And again, I said, but we've said how important this is, and it's not going to happen unless we change. And it's not technology, it's just work, but it's not going to happen unless we all think about what's the value downstream of doing a little bit extra work around this.
And how do you, I think that's a really important point, because a lot of companies who are looking to develop those new solutions don't think ahead of what the solution would look like when it's deployed and when it's deployed in scale, right? We get so excited and say, ta-da, this works. But we really have to think a couple of steps ahead to say, what does this works mean in the hands of hygienists, in the hands of an administrator or a dentist who is probably overwhelmed with all the patients they need to see in a single day and managing all the complexity. And so it's interesting for our listeners to hear from you who are living it day in and day out. Some people say scarcity is the mother of innovation because you're figuring it out. And innovation is just a creative way of problem solving. That's all it is. To think about the workflow, the application in the field, and tell us maybe a little bit, what do you think the role of other ecosystem players? You touched a little bit about payment models. Are we in a place where it's payment models or the care delivery system is conducive for trying different things or doing things in a more innovative way? What is your take on that?
Let me say, I'm brand new to dental. Unlike most of the folks on this call, I've been at Benevis for 2 years. I was on the board for a year before that. But part of what I think at least informs my perspective is having worked in other areas of healthcare. So I ran an emergency room business, which is really sort of when the system fails. There are some people that should be in the emergency room, but 2/3 of them should not. 2/3 of them should have had some sort of an encounter that would have prevented them from being in the emergency room. And sort of having been there and seen that, I am always thinking about where are the things that could have been done earlier. And then business before that was actually in cancer care, where so much is around the coordination of care. And to me, the learnings all come back to the sharing of information. And whether it is the sort of sharing of medical records or it is QR codes so that a person brings their demographics and their history to the office with them in an effective way, I just know that those are things that are going to maybe not help us next year, but over the next 3 to 5 years in terms of really improving outcomes and avoiding the chronic disease. As I like to say, the fee schedules in dentistry are upside down. They try to pay as little as possible for an oral exam or health, but then they'll pay so much for a really complex recovery. And we actually did a study in Louisiana looking at our care delivery because we do a lot around prevention and sealants and others. And we actually have a lower cost per patient of almost $80 per patient, but that's working hard to work within the system. What the system really should be doing is paying more for preventative care because over time it's going to help. It's just, it takes a while. It's happened somewhat in MedSurg because the Affordable Care Act have been paying more for primary care and geriatric primary care. We need the same thing to happen in dentistry.
Boy, I love what you just said. It's the fee schedules are upside down and we need to focus on diagnostics. That boy, as a specialist and leading teams, that is so right. Jane, let me pivot over to you a little bit and let me change gears a touch. The concept company is culture. Company is culture. I know you live and breathe this. How would you describe the culture that you have at Benevis, and what is the big driver there that really creates that?
Culture is mission. I think that's the reason that I have been in the organization for more than 13 years. I tell people that I can practice dentistry in so many different ways, as you're aware, Dr. Levine, but what keeps me here is the mission, which is to provide access to care for the underserved. And I think because of the mission, it attracts like-minded leaders, which is why there are a lot of people that I work with that have been here a long time. And that even when they do join, like Brian, who's been here for a year or two, it seems like they've been here longer because they are here with the right mission. And I think that when you keep that in mind, things naturally go well, because that's how I speak with my dentists, right? If you do everything, make every decision in terms of what is the best interest and what is the best thing for this patient that I have in the chair, you can't help but do the right thing for the patients, but also be successful, because you're going to make an effort not to have them wait too long, because their time is just as valuable as my time. You're going to make sure that you do the most you can in that limited time, because you know that they have a hard time coming to the appointment. The fact that they came to the appointment is it's almost a miracle, right? Because these, especially for children, they're dependent on the parents we're obsessed with teeth, because we're in the dental industry, but not everyone is obsessed with teeth, right? So if something comes up, they may forego their dental appointment for other things in their life. So we want to make sure when they're coming for cleaning, if we have the time to provide the treatment for them, let's do it because we care about the patients. And I think that's, for me, that's the most important thing. And that's what keeps me here. And I think that we have this great mission, but we also need to make sure that we continue to meet the margin so that we can carry out the mission, right? And that's where the DSO and Brian and his team, I think, supports us with that. And so it's a partnership at every level of the company. And I think that's unique. A lot of times you have operational leaders who are overseeing health industry, but you need that partnership, the clinical partnership, so that we work together. And I think that's what we have at Benevis, which I really appreciate as a clinician.
Yeah. You're beautifully describing servant leaderships where everybody's looking to make each other much better. And in turn, we be better. Brian, in your own thinking about culture and as it relates to certain business metrics of turnover, and retraining and training and the expense of that and longevity of the employees, the happiness of the employees, how has the build of the culture impacted those metrics? And how do you look at that? And how do you think about it?
So I just have to be candid and honest. We're not as good at that as we need to be. We do a really great job of when a dentist joins Benevis, providing them training and care and support to be successful. We have not traditionally done as good a job at that with our hygienists and our dental assistants, who are so critical to our care delivery model. So we've actually just started to really address that in three ways. One is it's really hard because we all know the shortage of healthcare workers, and particularly in dental. And I have said they are not going to be on the back providing care for 40 hours. They're going to be trained, supported. And as much as we have patients waiting and everything like that, it's just not going to work unless we're giving them time and room to be trained in our care delivery model. The second thing is that we are making sure that there is some engagement because our offices are really busy and we're actually measuring the number of times that an office manager and a doctor have had a conversation with that new employee. And then finally, we are trying to come up with more ways of kind of certification levels so that if someone's been with us 6 months and they're able to now do, whether it's radiography or other things, that we are recognizing that, not just in their compensation, but really in terms of their role in the office. It's a huge challenge. We are not as good at it as we need to be. But I think we have the model because we've done it for our doctors. We just need to make sure we're doing it for all of the care delivery professionals.
That's the 1% rule, right? We get better 1% every day by the end of the year with 365 up. And it's as a clinician, healthcare provider, educator, and business person, it really is so important. These things that we do really well, we do more of that, and things where we can improve. We build the KPIs and the metrics to be able to measure that and just focus on it, power of intention as business people, but also, of course, as clinicians. And Jay, just to pivot it back to you, we all know service businesses, it's all predicated on that culture, on your people side of the equation. How do you educate your teams, your hygienist assistants, operational people, doctors? How do you think about educating them? And is that also an area that you're constantly working on and growing and developing?
Yeah. And I think Brian brought up a good point about the training, because what we're doing is we're investing in people. I think that when you invest in them, you allow them to be supported and grow within the organization, which is important. I think that in terms of having a robust training program allows the employees to understand that, hey, we believe in you. We know that you can be successful with the right tools, and we're going to do that for you. And one of the other great things within the organization is that we have a lot of upward growth for our team members, which I think is really exciting. We have district managers who started as dental assistants or front desk receptionists. And I think that to recognize those individuals, because I think that's one of the biggest things that sometimes people have gripes about at a workplace where they feel like they work so hard and they're not recognized, but we recognize them and we provide them, if they have the potential, provide them with opportunities for growth. And they get to mentor and invest in other individuals to create people like them. And I think that's really important. And I feel like I'm a great example of it, where I started as an associate dentist. I joined the company 13 and a half years ago thinking, hey, let's see, I like the mission. I like the people that I met along the way while interviewing. And then here I am, where I get to be the voice for the associate dentist and the field as I'm visiting offices. And I think that's not something to take lightly. I know that. And I love that it's an organization that gives me a platform where I can speak on behalf of the field. I speak with Brian all the time about things that are happening in the offices. And I think that's part of how the training program even started, where Brian was visiting the offices and he realized, hey, we need to invest in the assistants and the support team so that the dentist can be even more supported and grow and provide better care for our patients. And I think that's important.
I love the conversation because it's highlighting the depth and the richness of your thinking in how we deliver care that's affordable, that's high quality care, because these are artificial trade-offs, right? High quality care doesn't have to come at a cost or at a cost of innovation. You could do all of these things if you're focused on optimizing the patient and centering around the patient, right? This whole conversation is, how do I deliver the best quality of the care to the patients where they need it? And the rest of it, the bottom line metrics and all everything else falls off of that first underlying question. The other piece that I love here is that we have a great, if I have an ideal view of what the most insightful conversations in oral health look like, it's probably a representation of the tapestry we have on the call here. We have 50% of folks who are non-clinicians, non-dental insiders, and 50% of the room who live, breathe, and deliver care on a daily basis. And 100% of the room is mission aligned, right? So if I have a formula for what a productive conversation looks like, it's a diverse group that is insiders across silos and all rowing in the same direction. That's that mission piece. And I do want to give a shout out to all of our listeners who are maybe faced with a little bit of trepidation of, I'm not a dentist, or I'm not an expert, or what do I know? I think there's so much room for growth and need for innovation and need for smart, hungry, brilliant, curious minds to come in and do work in dentistry. So if we're seeing anything from this conversation, I think that's probably an invitation. I don't know if Brian and Jane, you would join me in that, but it's an invitation for non-traditional paths folks to come in and solve some of these problems with us. What are some of those biggest problems that you think that are worthy of innovation and some new solutions that we need so that your model and your organization can continue to grow and scale in the next 3 to 5 years? Where would you want to put your efforts behind?
What I, being new to dentistry and being new to pediatrics, it just never occurred to me that before you can enroll in school, you have to have an annual physical, but you don't have to have an oral exam. And just how is it that we're saying that this is really important, and we've always used schools as a key leverage point because parents will do anything to make sure their kid gets to school. And therefore, we use that to say, let's make sure they get their annual physical. And why don't we also say there should be an annual oral exam? 50% of the children who have Medicaid benefits do not get to a dentist in any single year. And we need to do everything we can to support the families. And to me, one answer is, let's just make sure that it's a box you just check that you've had that oral exam. And I know it will significantly increase the number of kids that get there, and then we'll have diagnostic and preventative care, which is really what's going to help us all.
If we connect the dots, having a foundation, our Glow Good Foundation, and we go into the schools, what we've learned, Brian and Jane, deeply, is that when we get to the children early, what happens? They get preventative. They don't develop the decay and the tooth loss and the loss of function and the loss of self-esteem that their adult parents have. They're in a loop. There's no access to care. People can die from a bee sting. They think walking around in pain, not being able to have teeth extracted or root canal because they would have to fly to Nassau. No access. But here we are in this country, and we don't have a national model that says, let's at least go into the schools. Let's get the basic screenings, the exam, the fluoride treatments, and then treat those small cavities so they don't end up like some people that do with small little decay turns into a life-threatening event. How do we then connect the dots between the public health teams of our dental schools? Because that's where I'm seeing is a very important stakeholder here, to a state or national business model, to the not-for-profits like our Glow Good Foundation, to what you folks are doing, who have figured out how to create a viable economic model. How do we connect those dots? Because it seems to me that we really can.
I think there's a terrific platform. Again, being somewhat new to this field, I am incredibly impressed, and I never thought I would say this, with the managed care organizations that are active in Medicaid. Because the states are ultimately their clients, they do really have both a structure and an orientation towards a public mandate. And I just think we have to find more and more ways to connect that to education, because there's so much that they are doing with the states, and they do have progressive models around a dental home and around oral evals, but there's just not enough connectivity to the education system. And that, to me, I think that's the best platform to do it.
And I think the schools are important, and then, but in also partnership with the parents, because I think that the parents need to take ownership over the children's oral health care. And I think that's why we are able to provide that dental home for the children, where parents come back with the children when they are getting their cleanings, and when the hygienists are giving the oral hygiene instructions to the children, parents are listening to it and they are checking themselves out to see what they need to do for themselves, but also for the children, because the children are younger and may not be able to follow up with their care. So when we tell the child, because oftentimes the parents will be like, oh, my four-year-old child loves to brush their teeth. And I want to tell them, that's great. I love that they care enough to do it. But as a grown-up, why don't we go in and help them? Because sometimes they may not be doing a thorough job as an adult would be doing. And then also to remember that with children, they have different pain thresholds. When they have that dental pain, there may be an abscess tooth, but the child may not feel it. And that's when it's critical that they've been following up with their care, where we identify it. Because with an adult, when we have something that hurts a little bit, we're able to voice it. But children may not be able to voice it. So we need to make sure that they continue to follow up with their regular cleaning appointments and checkups so that we can identify it in case the child is not able to identify it. And I think that's important. Also in terms of just providing that access to care, I think that another part is to, we need more dentists, dental providers, and to be on this mission with us. We have less than 20% of our providers accept Medicaid insurance. And we need more providers to come along with us, join our organization or other organizations like us to provide care and want to do that. And I think that, Dr. Levine, you mentioned it, where it starts at the dental schools, but we talk about it and educate our dental students too about the importance of playing a part in a community where we can do good and play a part in it.
You know, I think that's a very big connector, because currently we're working with four universities at our foundation. And you said it before, Jane, you said we're putting together like-minded people. People understand that we do well and do good at the same time. And you have to find those people early, but you can create an environment for them to thrive with that mindset. It's a very specific mindset that some people really have it. And if you can foster that early, to your point, in dental school, and connect into an organization like yours that has a viable, sustainable business model, I think you're going to not have any doctor shortage or hygienist or assistant. It's all about our people that really help us execute on our vision and our planning. It's amazing. Jane and Brian, this has been just a great conversation. I personally learned so much, and I have to tell you, I'm so excited to follow up with you after this, because I have some ideas that maybe we can work together a little bit. and help solve some of these problems because we really believe in the equality of healthcare and that people have the rights to have it and to have the access to care that we all enjoy. Absolutely. It's an absolute. What do you say, Maria Filipova?
I echo everything that was really planted as seeds in this conversation. I think it was a really productive way to take a lot of complex issues and figure it and put them in a much more manageable, bite-sized thing that we can wrap our arms around. I would like to also think about, love Brian's idea about, hey, if kids have a required annual physical, they should have a required oral health exam. I also think that by the time we need to really start earlier with the parents and the pregnant mom and family planning, because having a relationship with your dentist and thinking about your dentist as part of your overall care team is mission critical. And so that's my challenge and invitation. There is no such thing as thinking about your child's oral health too early. Pediatricians are not necessarily sending that message. OBGYNs, fertility clinics are not sending that message, but we know that the risk of preterm labor increases multifold if your periodontal disease is not taken care of and if you're a high-risk pregnancy. To all the moms and young families looking to start one, please talk to your dentist, talk to your pediatrician or your family doctor about your oral health needs. So that would probably be my parting thought and invitation. And I'm hoping that we find our listeners will find that interesting and find ways to connect. So Brian and Jane, what would be the best way for, if our listeners want to be part of your journey, part of your mission, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Yep, Benevis.org. We are in 120 communities. This year, we're going to treat about 750,000 children. Our goal is to get to 1 million children a year very quickly and then get to 2 million. And as Dr. Wang said, we would love to have more people not just join us, but also do what we're doing. And we're happy to help others who are looking to do that in their community.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and for inspiring us and our listeners. This was quite exciting.
Enjoyed it and look forward to working with you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us on.
Oh, it was great to have you. Thank you, Jane. And thank you, Brian.
Thanks for listening to the Think Oral podcast.
For the show notes and resources from today's podcast,
visit us at www.outcomesrocket.health/thinkoral.
Or start a conversation with us on social media.
Until then, keep smiling
and connecting care.